copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So why should we dedicate a session on the apostolic exhortation, the joy of the gospel, or in Latin, Evangelii Gaudium? And there are three main reasons why I think it is important for us as evangelical European theologians to become conversant with this document. And the first one is this, that it is by far the most quoted document by Pope Francis in his speeches, in his addresses, in his letters, in his writings. He often quotes from this very document, and apparently he likes it. He poured his heart and vision and passion in this document, and so in order to have an entry point into Pope Francis's vision, this is the best document we have that captures what lies at the heart of the Pope. Unlike his predecessor, Benedict XVI, Pope Francis has a very different style in drafting, writing, arguing, articulating his speeches and writings. Normally, Pope Benedict would provide for every speech or homily a short, dense, theological essay full of quotations from the scriptures, the church fathers, both Greek and Latin, the medieval writers, the modern authors, and the contemporary authors, and each speech, each address would really be a tour de force into historical theology, dogmatic theology, etc., and in the church tradition. Unlike his predecessor, Pope Francis' speeches are, you know, very simple. No quotation from the Church Fathers, no reference to the Middle Ages, no reference to the modern authors, and what he does instead is if he needs to quote something, it is probably this very document that he wrote or he penned or signed. And he himself considers the joy of the gospel the programmatic document of his pontificate. So it's not just a matter of the quantity of quotations and the many times in which it is referred to, but also subconsciously presented as the heart of what Pope Francis wants to say, to do, to advocate for. And thirdly, the third reason, there may be others, but these are, I think, the most important ones, is that it deals with a theme or a cluster around mission that is of most interest to evangelicals. So it's not a document on an obscure traditional topic in Catholic theology or on an obscure aspect of sacramental theology. It's on mission. And so for us as evangelical theologians, it resonates with at least the vocabulary or one important fundamental terminology, word, that is often also associated with evangelical spirituality and theology. Especially in the light of the 2010 Cape Town commitment, where, again, against the backdrop of the Lausanne tradition, the Lausanne Covenant, the Manila Manifesto, the Cape Town commitment, there is a whole stream of evangelical reflection and perhaps development over the word mission, missiology, missional. And it is interesting to compare and to read these documents in parallel as to see points of intersections and points of departure. And this has also become of interest not only for evangelicals but also for more broadly ecumenical circles. If you read the last WCC document published after the Harare conference back in April this year, it's about mission. And many of the words that are used by the present day WCC mission are related to many of the words related to mission are sun-like the vocabulary that evangelicals use and even Pope Francis uses: transformation, justice, renewal, the renewal in society, in the world, fair practices, and so on. So it is important that we do our homework to try to understand what is at stake, what is going on there. And given the importance of the Catholic Church as the biggest religious institution and body globally in our world. So the background of this document is important for us to consider. It was not part of an initiative by Pope Francis that, you know, decided to write this document out of the blue, but as he came to office in 2013, he received something that Pope Benedict had initiated in 2010, with calling for a synod of all the bishops of the Catholic Church from around the world, calling them to Rome to discuss the very topic of the new evangelization. The new evangelization is the term, technical term, used by John Paul II and then by Benedict XVI to try to bring to Catholic theology, bring the theme of evangelization to the center stage in Catholic theology as well as pastoral practice. And so after the 2012, Synod on the New Evangelization, what is traditionally expected by the Pope after the Synod ends is to produce a document, a post-synodical document on the Synod. In this case, on the Synod on the New Evangelization. So between the Synod and the publication of The Joy of the Gospel, Pope Benedict XVI had resigned, so leaving the task of wrapping up the results, the outcomes of the Synod, leaving the task of wrapping up the results of the Synod to his successor. So it was Pope Francis that took over that responsibility and actually produced this document and signed it. Although with some significant changes in terms not only of the style, in this document you won't find many, again, patristic quotations, medieval quotations, and references to historical theology. It is indeed a Franciscan document. But not only that, Francis shifts the emphasis in terms of the wording, the terminology used, away from the new evangelization terminology or expression used by John Paul II and Benedict XVI, into using more frequently the terminology centered on the word mission. Apparently, Pope Francis likes the word mission more than evangelization or the new evangelization. For him, mission is a much broader term. The new evangelization, in his perception, brings about the idea of proclamation, and Francis has consistently criticized any idea of mission entailing the proclamation aspect of proclaiming the good news pervasively apologetically, with the aim at convincing the people to whom we proclaim the gospel. Mission is a much broader term involving attitudes, involving pastoral postures, involving relationships, and not so much involving persuasive proclamation and content-based communication. So it's interesting to notice that between the two popes, that shift is occurring from the new evangelization to mission, or back to mission, or forward to mission. And the transition is determined by the fact that Pope Francis seems to dislike any idea of direct, apologetic, verbal proclamation, and instead prefers a much wider term involving behaviors, attitudes, relationships, community, and pastoral concerns. Of course, Pope Francis took part at the 2012 Synod on the new evangelization, but his main reference point is not so much the Synod, but rather another important document it was very instrumental in drafting that goes back to Latin America, where when in 2007 he presided over the drafting of... In Aparecida in Brazil, Catholic bishops of Latin America came together to discuss the topic of on how to relaunch the mission of the Church in the continent. And Bergoglio then was chairing the drafting committee as well as the whole conference. And if we want to find a background document where we can trace the main themes and threads and concerns and vocabulary of the joy of the gospel, that document is the Aparecida document, where the theology of the people is spelt out, the idea that the church, in order to do mission, needs to listen to the concerns of the people, and instead of being a top-down organization teaching authoritatively what has to do with doctrine and morals, the task of the church is rather to listen to what the people are saying, to what the people of God is saying, and therefore serving the people of God rather than imposing a grid or an agenda on the people of God. And in doing so, therefore, making sure that the church, the institutional church, honors and praises the forms of spirituality and devotions that the people is involved in order to elevate them to what the church cherishes the most. It's rather than a top-down theological trajectory, a bottom-up trajectory, giving the people of God full theological responsibility to express their own desires and concerns and beliefs and practices, and having the magisterial church stamping or recognizing those beliefs and practices. Okay? So, as far as the contents of the apostolic exhortation are concerned, these are the chapters actually of the document. The reform of the church in her missionary outreach, that's the first chapter. So you see these key important words that are used here. Reform. That's the word that he introduces. Again, not out of the blue, that even this word has a history, but he uses it in a very specific way, going back to Aparecida. The reform of the church needs to listen to the people. That is what needs to drive this longing for reformation or reform. He doesn't speak of reformation, he speaks about reform. Reformation would have historical theological overtones, but reform is a more neutral word that is usable. So the reform of the church in our missionary outreach. In order to do mission, in order to relaunch mission, the church needs to go through a phase of reform. And this other word, very important, outreach. Not the church reflecting on herself, self-referentially attracting people to its own institutions and practices and hierarchy and sacraments, but rather the reform of the church looks like the church moving outward. And mission is that dynamics, taking the church from being self-referential to becoming outward-looking, outreaching. Reaching out. Mission is the engine that makes it possible for the church to transit from a maintenance self-referential mood into a missionary outlook. Okay? So this text is very much concentrated on internal dynamics of the Catholic Church, suggesting ways of moving out of the Catholic comfort zone, out of the idea that people need to come to the Catholic Church, but rather conveying the idea that the church needs to go out in order to be missionary. You see, it's a cultural shift. It's a pastoral, cultural, missiological shift that Pope Francis is pushing the Catholic Church to do. That's the first chapter. And the second chapter, the temptations faced by pastoral workers. And here is very critical, or some resistant attitudes, passive attitudes, conservative attitudes of pastoral workers, resisting any change, resisting any reform. So the temptations of pastoral workers are to say, we've always done this way, why should we change? And he addresses that topic in the second chapter. Third chapter, it's a more ecclesiological chapter. The church understood as the entire people of God which evangelizes. So the mood of the church needs to transit from being a self-referential mood into becoming a missionary mood. He is aware that this transition would face resistance. It's not to be taken for granted. It will face opposition. But his desire is that the church as a whole needs to go through an ecclesiological, self-critical reappropriation of what it means for the church to be the people of God, and locating the responsibility of evangelizing, doing mission, not so much on the clergy, but primarily on the whole of the people of God. And for you know, if you think about these things against the background of not so much Vatican II, but Vatican I, 19th century Catholicism, these are, you know, real innovations in many ways. Of course, he would argue that as he introduces the category of the people of God, he makes use of Vatican II has been the primary reference point in advocating for reconsidering, reconfiguring Catholic ecclesiology in terms not so much of the society of the Catholic Church, but in terms of the people of God as the pilgrim people of God. And in terms of the tools of this mission, the homily is given attention. It's a very interesting chapter talking about how Pope Francis thinks about sermon preparation. So he criticizes standard Catholic homiletical practices marked by lecturing moods or moralizing temptations. And he basically says the priest needs to prepare his homilies by thinking about a 5-minute unit, very simple, making it simple and making it accessible. It doesn't really give an outline on what the content should be. He wants to suggest and encourage Catholic preachers to be simple and not to pretend to be lecturers or masters or to speak beyond the level of the people, but to speak to the people. It doesn't speak about the content. It doesn't speak about the gospel at this stage. Then, you see other chapters, the inclusion of the poor in society. That's another area of missiological concern. It is not defined what the gospel is. It is not defined what the mission is, technically speaking. It is going around the topic. And so we have to do our homework in order to understand what he is talking about. In saying, calling the church to a time of reform in order to regain missionary impetus, facing resistances, reappropriating the category of the people of God through simple messages and through the inclusion. That's a very Franciscan word. The inclusion of the poor in society. That's a missionary tool. That's a missionary task. To be simple and to include. And since we live in a pluralistic world, attention is given to peace and dialogue within society. Missionary work should not go out in imperialistic mentality or ideology. It should seek for peace and dialogue. We'll see how this dialogue is understood, very interestingly understood. And finally, the spiritual motivations for mission. And we will be focusing on that final section too, in order to see what it means by the spiritual motivations for mission. Basically, recovering the importance of the people's devotions and looking at Mary as the primary example for how to do mission. But this falls under the rubric of the spiritual motivations. We would maybe come to this chapter with other expectations, but ultimately what the spiritual motivations are is to get nearer to the people by way of honoring their practices and presenting Mary as this mild, gentle, powerful symbol or picture or model on what it means for the church to be a missionary church. Okay, as far as the structure is concerned, what it's interesting, not only what is included here, but also what is excluded, what is not present. It's silences. It's important to see positively, you know, things as they appear, but also seeing what is missing in terms of having a fully orbed theology of mission or call to mission. What is actually missing here is what are the implications for mission, or what are under what are the what is stressed here is what the Pope wants to address, but what he misses out indicates what he doesn't want to underline. So there is no reference to the need for conversion to Christ. The word conversion is used here and there, but not mainly in terms of the conversion of the church. It's an internal conversion, but the expectation is not that people outside of the church, out there, are expected to go through a conversion experience. There is no reference to what happens if someone does not accept the gospel. What are the consequences? There is no reference to judgment, God's justice in terms of dealing with unbelief. There is not a single critical reference to other religions. There is much criticism of the evils of present-day Western society, global society, but not in terms of personal destiny of people, not in terms of what is at stake as far as the eternal future or destiny of people. So, let's have a look, closer look at what is meant by a call to missionary conversion. And that is what really lies at the heart of the document. And this is also something that is causing increasing unsettlement within Catholic circles that are not used to have... Our Catholic Church is used to have critical voices on the fringes. Of course, a global institution, a large worldwide historical institution, always have critical voice here and there. But the absolutely new reality of the Catholic Church in this present generation is that the critical voice is actually the head of the church. And that makes people unsettled and nervous. And since this is not just a matter of one-off document, but this is the consistent teaching and message of the Pope, it is causing increasingly a negative reaction from within the Church itself. Missionary outreach is paradigmatic to all the Church's activity. So, the Pope is calling the Church away from a maintenance mood, away from reflecting on the needs of the Church in terms of its, our own necessities and concerns and ways in which the world would come and meet those needs, into becoming something that the paradigm needs to... It's a paradigm shift. And outreach needs to be the new paradigm. And the Church is in need of being in permanent state of mission. There is a kind of missionary permanent state that needs to qualify the reality, the activities, the aspirations of the Church. And in order to do that, he is aware that some of the structures of the Church need to go through a reform, a kind of change. And he offers the papacy as one candidate of this reform. He doesn't say, well, you have to change, but the papacy is as good as it is. He says, I offer this opportunity for the papacy as you know now it, to go through a time of conversion. Now, conversion, what does he mean by it? Basically, what he means is a bit less than perhaps we would expect for this word to mean. Basically, conversion of the papacy here means a decentralizing tendency in making decisions, taking decision power away from absolute centralized Vatican-led decision-making processes and into more decentralized patterns whereby national bishops' conferences are given more, are entitled, are empowered to make more decisions. So it's about internal rebalancing of the responsibility of the central authorities and the responsibilities of the peripheral authorities. For centuries, that tendency has been driven by a centralizing trajectory. Pope Francis is calling for that centralizing trajectory to be changed into a decentralizing tendency, and calling conversion of the papacy also means giving more weight to synods. So making the practice of calling synods of bishops, that is gatherings of the whole Catholic bishops around the world, making this practice a ordinary, ongoing practice, not just an extraordinary event, so that these ordinary, ongoing gatherings of Catholic bishops will be given, will be empowered to make decisions. Okay? But he calls this conversion. So it's again, the use of words is very interesting because we need to do, you know, the work of understanding what is in the word, what is behind the word, what is around the word, and what is after the word. But in reading papal documents, we are aware that language is not univocal. Language is equivocal, and it needs to be interpreted in the terms of the document itself, in the wider context of present-day Catholicism, in the even wider context of the tradition of the Catholic Church. But some of the problems that we have sometimes is to, when we see some catchwords there that resonate with our own spirituality, upbringing, sensitivity. Oh, he's talking about conversion. But we need to understand what he means by it. He's talking about missionary activity, but we need to understand what he means by it. Not as us superimposing our own meaning, but as hearing, in fairness, what this language is meant to mean by the authority, in this case the Pope, that wants to present it. So digging deeper, we're still, you know, looking at the surface, the structure, the background, the terminology. And if we dig deeper, we are confronted with a presentation of mission centered on a understanding of the gospel that is very interestingly shaped around an understanding of the gospel to be a message of, rather than being a message of salvation from God's judgment, it seems to be an access to a fuller measure of a salvation that is already given to all mankind. He's using the word evangelizing, he's using the word mission, he's calling the church to a missionary outreach. But what is meant by all this cluster of words indicates that we are confronted with an understanding of the gospel in terms of its being an invitation to access to a measure of grace that is still operating out there in view and with the desire of accessing a fuller measure. So it's not transitioning from a broken covenantal relationship with God, away from God, into a reconciled relationship with God through repentance and faith in Christ as He came to us, died and rose from the dead, and is coming back. But rather, it's a transition of degree from a lesser appropriated perception, apprehension, appropriation of salvation to a fuller measure of a salvation that is already given to all mankind. According to Francis, then, mission is the joyful willingness to extend the fullness of grace to the world that is already under grace, that is already graced. And in order to understand this, we have to, if we stay on the surface, if we just use the word, if we just understand the words that he uses in terms of our own understanding, of our own evangelical understanding, and even in terms of the Lausanne understanding of mission, if you look at the Cape Town commitment, the Manila, there is always a section of what is entailed in the gospel in terms of its being a message of salvation from wrath, judgment, to peace and reconciliation, and the outcomes of that message in terms of their holistic consequences. Here, the whole point of engaging the church in mission is to call the church to go out in order to extend what the church already enjoys in terms of its in terms of the fullness of grace, extending it to the world that is already under some measures of grace. And this is evident in the way in which different people's groups or different sectors of the Christian world and the world of religions are considered. It's the other side of the word, of the meaning of the word mission. It's always important not to look at one side, but also to look at both sides. What are the consequences of this missionary outreach? Well, non-Catholic Christians are already united in baptism. So Pope Francis says, as we move out, we need to be aware that we will encounter many non-Catholic Christians, and we are already united with them. We want to extend a fuller measure of grace to them, but knowing that we are already united. So it's not calling them in, but actually embracing them as they are already united with us. As far as Jews are concerned, they don't need to convert. The covenant with the Jewish people is still valid and has been not broken, has not been broken, and therefore we just want to embrace them, affirm them, extend our love to them, but there is no need for them to convert. This is a word that is used there. No conversion is needed as far as Jews are concerned. With believing Muslims, the way is dialogue. So mission to Muslims is dialogue. You see, not proclamation, not evangelization, but mission. That means dialogue, because together with us, they adore the one and merciful God. That's a quotation from Vatican II and John Paul II. There is a degree of unity with Muslims too. So our mission is not to get out there and tell them to come in, as if where they are already there is no grace available. It's about extending our tender, merciful embracement by way of dialoguing and honoring the fact that we together with us, we adore the one and merciful God. And as far as other non-Christians are concerned, that's an interesting quotation. Even in the context of the recent celebrations of the Reformation, where the justification issue was again under scrutiny, is Pope Francis affirming justification by faith? That's a way in which he uses the word justification. Non-Christians are also justified by the grace of God and are associated to the Paschal mystery of Jesus Christ. So justification applies to non-Christian religions already. And so they are already mysteriously associated to the Paschal mystery of Christ. The task of missionary activity is to go out to extend maybe a fuller measure of grace, but the assumption is that as they are, these groups are already in a state of grace. In the final section of the document, when Pope Francis speaks about the spiritual motivations of mission, these are the two subheadings of that chapter. It talks about the evangelizing power of popular piety. So it's not so much a proclamation of the truth, rather an affirmation of popular piety that is recognized as having evangelizing power. So what it means, evangelizing? The Pope associates evangelism with popular piety. He uses the word evangelism, and at times, you know, evangelical readers say, oh, the Pope is familiar with the terminology of evangelism. But then he associates it to something that is quite difficult to square with basic gospel truths. Actually, it validates a whole set of popular devotions that they express deep feelings in people's hearts and practices and groups, but often are expressions of things that do not originate in the gospel, are not conform to the gospel. Actually, they move people away from the gospel. And then Mary, of course, mother of evangelization and the star of evangelization. So the model there is not so much Christ as the evangelizer or the Spirit as the evangelizer, but Mary as the embodied example of what it means for a person to be presented as a model for this new missionary outreach and mood that the Pope is advocating for. So summing up before having a time of discussion, sweet and sour feelings. Certainly we have a shared vocabulary in the sense that it's possible after Pope Francis, but even earlier than Pope Francis, to have the common reference to words that are used across the board of present-day Christianity. The problem is that, and that's the sour aspect, is that this language needs to be understood and needs to be honored in its own terms. And when we do that work of exegesis, of hermeneutics, of papal statements, Catholic statements, we soon discover that beyond the superficial overlapping of sounds, there is a very different world. There is a very different worldview. There is a very different theology. And the Pope is actually re-engineering the word mission, even in terms of Catholic missiology. So shifting the emphasis from the new evangelization into this missiological vision, and introducing even new nuances in Catholic missiology. And for us, the importance then, the important thing is to properly exegeting the message of the Pope in his own terms and to respond biblically. Thank you for your attention. Thank you.